So, brown robe or brown jacket? Brown jacket relates to the Order of Interbeing, an order that was founded in the mid-60s by Thich Nhat Hanh, as a, we might call it a bodhisattva order, an order of people who really want to dedicate their lives formally to the path of awakening, the path of being free of all suffering, the path of good living, altruistic living, and at the same time equally want to be of service to others, to benefit others, and especially to build communities of awareness, communities of mindfulness, communities that can learn to live in an enlightened way with one another. So we have a fairly significant order here, probably over 30 people who have been ordained and those who are aspirants. And we had a retreat this weekend, and we don't get much opportunity to wear our brown jackets, so we took them out of the closet this morning just to make sure they're still a little fresh. But because of our we really had a wonderful retreat this weekend. I want to talk this morning about selfless service. And I realize in saying those words that may sound kind of extraordinary or sort of far removed from our lives. Our lives as ordinary lay people with families, with responsibilities, with jobs. What does that have to do with a life of selfless service? And a life of selfless service, please maybe make clear, is not a life of volunteerism. Recently, for example, in our community, Florida Community Mindfulness, pretty much everything is done by volunteers. See, I use that word, volunteers. So everything that goes on here, from the setting up, cleaning up, taking care of the grounds, you know, everybody who works in the meditation hall, days of mindfulness, retreats, workshops, classes, everything that is done here, taking care of the website. We have a children's program going on this morning. That is all done by members who are not paid. And so we were talking a couple of months ago, there was a discussion about, you know, our community and volunteers. And I said, I don't like that. Because volunteer connotes kind of like a doing, a thing that we do, right? I do this, this, and this, and I also volunteer here, right? Many people, it's sort of a common phrase these days, we talk about giving back, right? Now I'm giving back. Retirees often talk this way. So for those of you who are younger may not be familiar with that term, but as you get older, people say, what are you doing these days? Well, I'm giving back. Again, like it's something I do. It's selfless service is not about any of that. It's not about how things look. It's not about what I do. Because people can be doing even things that look good outwardly for all the wrong reasons. Maybe they're bored and they have time on their hands. Maybe because it's just socially acceptable, or it looks good, or they're out there networking. You know, a lot of businesses encourage their employees to get out there and volunteer because it's part of networking. And again, I'm not saying that's not all good or beneficial to society, but that's not selfless service. And so what I said to our board and the people, I said, we don't want to call it volunteer, because selfless service is part of our practice. It is a deep practice. It is a profound practice and is a way of life that's inextricably linked with awakening. Uh, So let me talk a little bit this morning about selfless service. It's interesting. In traditional Buddhism, which I was thinking about a little earlier, in traditional Buddhism, there is a section of the traditional Buddhist canon called the Jataka Tales. I don't know if people are familiar with the Jataka Tales. Maybe a few are. The Jataka Tales are interesting. They are purported to be, and there are many of them, I don't know, 50, 100, these stories. And these are purported to be the stories of Shakyamuni Buddhas. Everybody knows him, the historical Buddha who lived 2,600 years ago. These are his previous lives, right? This is what he's been up to. See, so it's interesting because the story that we know of the Buddha is a story that's primarily based on introspection, deep looking, insight, meditation, right? It's a path of understanding and wisdom that we see him having done in this lifetime. Well, it's interesting that there's this whole body of literature that talks about how he got there, you see? That in this lifetime, why he so kind of easily did what he did. What were the causes and conditions? See, in Buddhism, everything is based on causes and conditions. Things don't just happen randomly. Things come out of causes. So what were the causes when you see somebody in this lifetime so deeply looking into life and so profoundly motivated to really untie, unpackage this whole thing of why human beings suffer? And is there another way of living this life that doesn't create suffering and actually creates happiness and well-being and joy and equanimity and ease? You know, how did this man so early in his life, surrounded by such wealth and ease and pleasure, kind of have this kind of powerful desire to know the answer to that? And then after he came to his own realization, spent the rest of the next 40 or 50 years just selflessly teaching to anybody who came to him, you know? Where did that come from, right? That's not a career path that most of us are aware of or would come to on our own. So in the Buddhist canon, they have these Jataka tales of, so it gives you a sense of, you know, what he's been up to in his past lives. So let me see if I can remember some of them. It's sort of a little bit like a once upon a time. Once upon a time, he was this, and once upon a time, he did that. The interesting thing about them is most of them, he was an animal. Some of them he was human, but many of them he was an animal. And we know that people who observe animals see that there are qualities, very human qualities, selfless qualities, that animals do. For example, there is the, what are the stories? There's a story of the brave little parrot. Why, once upon a time, there was a little parrot, and the forest caught on fire, and the parrot was just beside herself, wanting to save the forest, save the animals, and was just kind of in a tizzy of despair, of fear. And then all of a sudden it remembered there was a river not too far away, and it thought, well, I'll put out the fire. So it would fly down to the river and get a little water on its wings, kind of touch the river, and then fly back and shake its wings over the fire. And it kept doing this, back and forth. Well, you know, it wasn't very successful. And the little parrot was getting quite exhausted. And we are told that in the story that up above, in the realm of the gods, you know, the gods were just kind of lulling about the way they do. You know, they were drinking their wine, you know, scrolling the internet, watching Netflix, you know, just doing what they do. And every now and then they'd look down to the human realm and they'd see this little parrot and they'd laugh. Stupid little parrot, right? People are so stupid. But there was one god who kind of was moved by what the parrot was trying to do. And so in the story, as I well remember it, the god, they can do these things, transformed himself, herself into an eagle and flew down and basically flew up to the, quite large, flew up to the parrot and said, you know, stop it. You're just wasting your time. You're not going to put, and the little parrot said, I can't stop. I mean, these are my friends, all the animals, and they're all going to be killed. I can't stop. And so the eagle tried to talk the parrot out of it, and the eagle just wouldn't listen and kept doing it. And supposedly the eagle god, first, you know, in that sense of foolish rabbit, but then just moved by what the parrot was doing, was deeply moved and decided to help. And we are told that it did help, and while it was helping, because it was so moved by what the parrot was doing, tears came to his eyes, and gods, I guess, have quite large tears, and it was the tears of the gods that put out the fire. So that's one kind of story. There are lots of them. There's a story of the Banyan deer king who when the hunter, the king's hunter, was going to shoot a pregnant And this was quite a magnificent, and the king had told his hunters, you know, whatever you do when you go hunting for food and sport, don't kill this Banyan king, it's so wonderful, he's so beautiful. And so the hunter was about to kill this pregnant doe, and the king stepped in front and said to the hunter, no, kill me, don't kill her. And again, so moved. Was the hunter and told the king that the king decided that there'd be no more hunting in the forest. There's a story of the monkey king who again was willing to sacrifice his life when his tribe of monkeys was threatened by the king's archers because they were eating all the mangoes in the tree and sacrificed his life again. A story that that I actually had some experience with is when the Buddha was, he was actually a prince, so he was in the human realm at this point, and he was out hunting or whatever he was doing with his buddies, hunting buddies, and they're out hunting, and they came across a starving tigress, just laying there. Obviously was very sick and starving, and next to her were her cubs. And because she could not get up and hunt, you know, not only was she dying, but they were dying too. And so it is said that the prince was so moved by this, even though his friends were kind of scared. It was a tigress, and even though she was sick, it was still dangerous. He was so moved by the suffering of this mother who could not feed her cubs. Supposedly, there was a kind of a cliff above, and he went up there, and he jumped off the cliff. So he landed and died right next to her, so she could eat him. And therefore, she could live, and she could feed her cubs. And in the story, it says, you know, that this was an earlier life of this cub. And actually, it's interesting enough that if you ever go to Nepal and go to Kathmandu, outside of Kathmandu on a mountain, there is a place. And there is a kind of sculpture. And it says this was the place where when the Buddha was Prince So-and-so, he did this. And it's very interesting. I remember being there, and there's a tree. So people go there on pilgrimage. And many people go there just to remember this occurrence. And there's a tree there. And this tree is a very interesting tree, because it's filled with human hair, pieces of human hair that are tied. And what pilgrims do when they go there, sort of to acknowledge the sacrifice, they cut off some of their hair in a way of saying, you know, at this point I may not be ready to sacrifice my life for another. But I'll sacrifice some of my beautiful hair. So people do that there. So I think it is interesting that in the Buddhist literature, when a precedent, a cause of where did this man come from, right? That he was so dedicated to his own, well, again, to really uncovering the source of human suffering and to find a path to true human happiness and well-being, to enlightenment. And then so selflessly for 40, 50 years taught nonstop to anyone who came to him, you know, what were the cause and conditions that created that? We find it was what? A life of selflessness. A life of endlessly giving, not thinking of himself and always thinking of others. And actually for those of you, and now maybe that story makes sense to you, because it is said in the night of the Buddha's enlightenment, before his breakthrough, when he was assailed with various kinds of negative formations within his own mind, one of them was the formation of unworthiness and doubt. Who am I to think that I can be fully enlightened? Who am I to think that I am worthy of understanding the true nature of things and really being of benefit to so many beings? And supposedly, when these doubting thoughts of his own worthiness arose in his mind, he touched the earth. And if you look at images of the Buddha, many of the images, you'll see the Buddha, his left hand is resting in his lap, and his right hand is reaching down. That is called the touching the earth mudra. And what the Buddha has done there, he just reaches down and touches the earth. And supposedly at that moment, the earth signified to his worthiness by saying, there is not a square inch, there is not a square foot of earth of ground on this earth where in a previous lifetime this man has not been willing to sacrifice himself, his own well-being, even his own body, for the sake of others. So I say that as kind of an introduction to that selflessness, not just as a, I mean, in the Buddhist path, the wisdom path, the realization of non-self, the understanding that the I, me, mine is not who and what we are, but simply a designation of a thought. And as a fundamental misperception in the Buddhist meditative wisdom tradition, this is something that is looked deeply into. And many people think that's what it's all about. But it's really not about it. It's about that, but it's about this other thing. It's about selfless service, selfless living. Because realization without actualization and living it is not all that beneficial to the transformation of mankind, womankind, humankind, but is also is an incomplete realization. Because if there is a true realization of non-self, then the realization has to be that who one really is everyone and everything. And so when one comes to that realization or understanding, even in a glimmer, one can realize that, yes, the pain and suffering of others is mine. Right? So because most of us, because of the way we're conditioned, we do practice service, right? We do practice in a certain way, but we practice self-service. You see, we are in service to ourself. And all the needs and wants and desires of the self is what we are always serving. That's what we're doing. We are serving self, we're serving me, we're serving I. My needs, my wants, my desires, that's what I am in service to. And that's what I'm endlessly advancing, and that's what I really care about. And out of that comes a very charitable, serving kind of a relationship with ourself and its needs. And we are endlessly in service to ourself. Selfless service is something else. And again, it's not volunteerism. It's not giving back. It's a deep, profound practice of how to be in this world. Again, this brown jacket signifies that one is an ordained member of the Order of Interbeing. Interbeing is a term that was coined by Thich Nhat Hanh. We inter-are with each other, with animals and plants, with the earth, with the sky. We are not separate, disconnected selves. When one experiences life, one experiences oneself as an individualized, separate entity from everything else, then believing that my purpose in life is just to take care of my self needs, which often again are very identified with our body, becomes our path in life. And wherever we are and whoever we're with in whatever situation, home, work, relationship, it's always primarily about serving myself. But when one walks this other path, this path of selflessness, then it is very different. It means wherever I am, whoever I'm with, whatever situation, I am always present to the connection I have with everyone and everything. So that is why in the Buddhist teachings on love, compassion is this reflective, it's not simply empathy. It's not just that I feel your pain. It's I feel your pain and I want to relieve you of it, right? See, it's not, because empathy is like, so what? Right? Because we don't have empathy for ourselves, we have compassion for ourselves, hopefully, right? So if we're suffering, we want to do what, hopefully? We want to end our suffering, right? If I'm sick, we want to get medicine so I can get well, right? If I'm cold, I want to get some warm clothes on, right? Et cetera, et cetera. So, compassion means I acknowledge suffering of all types, but I want to remediate it. I want to eliminate it. I want it to cease. That's compassion. So when one has compassion, outwardly it means when I see other people who are suffering, when I see animals that are suffering, when I see an earth, a planet that is suffering, I want to remediate that suffering because I am connected to that suffering. I don't see it as the suffering of something other than myself. I understand that any harm that is done to the planet is harming the people who live on the planet, which is harming me. It doesn't matter if it's not right here directly harming me. It's wherever it is, it's harming me. That is a different way. That is compassion. We talk about taking joy in the joy of others, which means what? That I am happy when you're happy. I'm not just happy when I'm happy. And I'm not just happy when you're happy because you're doing what I want you to do. I'm happy because you're happy. See, it's very different. It's funny, there was a woman the other day who was talking about her relationship with her husband, and she said, it used to be I was always focused on what he was doing, or more probably not doing, to make me happy. That was the focus. And she said, I was never happy. But she said, since I've been practicing, I got it. In the relationship, my primary focus is how can I bring happiness to him? And she said, it's like a new relationship. And she's happier. But that's selfless service. And that can be done. It's not volunteerism. Again, I'm not putting down volunteerism, but it's not that. It's an attitude of the heart-mind. And it is something that we cultivate from morning till night. It is just the way we are in the world. It's very open. It's very spacious. Right? It's very connected to everyone and everything one is experiencing. And when it's open that way, that when we encounter any kind of difficulty with anyone, our natural, not our forced. And maybe for many of us it has to be more forced now, because it's not natural. But over time, as our practice deepens, our understanding deepens, it becomes more natural. Our natural response is, you know, how can I help? Is there anything I can do? So, people in the order of interbeing need to understand that this is what this life is about. When people are aspirants or people who are ordained in the order of interbeing, they are making the commitment to lead a selfless life. And that's not a chore. That's not a duty. That's a joy. Selfless people are happier people. Narcissistic, self-concerned people are unhappy people. Have you ever noticed that? I mean, we might even notice that within ourselves. When we are totally self-absorbed, self-concerned about our own problems, our own issue, our own... How are we? Are we light and happy and free? No, we're the opposite. But when our heart is open to others, it feels good. Does that make sense? This is very practical. So that is why when the group was talking about getting volunteers for this thing and that thing, I said, no, it's not about that. It's about developing within our community and the people who are members of it and practice with us the understanding that we are living a life of selfless service. When you're living a life of selfless service and somebody asks you to help, you are grateful for the opportunity. Right? Very different. You know, most of us, when we help, we're always looking for what? Where's the thank you? Right? Where's the thank you? Where's the acknowledgement? Can't believe they didn't say thank you to me. You know? Can't believe I wasn't acknowledged. Can't believe they pointed out that person's doing a good job, but nobody said anything about me. I'm out of here. Right? That's not selfless service. Selfless service transforms the server. Right? It's about our own transformation. You know, I need to learn to give. In the trainings of the precepts of the Order of Interbeing, it's under the one for generosity, it says one gives freely of one's material resources, one's energy, one's time, to benefit those in need. That's it. Right? You know, we have resources. What are our resources? Well, we all have bodies. We may not have money, but we have bodies. Our bodies have hands. Our bodies have eyes. We have minds. Right? How can they be of service to others? I have time. You know, I get up in the morning, I sleep at night, but in between, I have time. How can I use my time to be of benefit to others? Right? If I have material resources, right? Who am I accumulating it for? Well, most people would say, what? For me. Right? For me, for my future, for me, for my needs, my wants, my vacation. You know, it's like all about me. But what if we looked at our material resources and say, this is something that good fortune has brought to me. How can I use them for the benefit of others? Right? So when one looks at one's body and one's body resources, one's energy, one's mind, one's time, one's financial resources in this way, in this selfless way, it's very open and wonderful, isn't it? There's lots of freedom in that. There's lots of goodness in that. When it's all very parceled out, many of us, we're so guarded. Got to really protect my time. Got to really protect my body. Got to really protect my money. Right? Give a little here, give a little there, but don't, you know. That's very narrow. That is not the practice of selflessness. And you will feel differently when you open all the windows of your heart. You will feel differently. So selfless service, we can understand, going back to the Buddha, was a practice that he cultivated lifetime after lifetime. You know, again, whether you believe in lifetimes, you don't have to. But just and take it as a metaphor or a story or whatever, that doesn't matter. But understanding that it is that is the lifestyle of someone who is walking a path to enlightenment. Whatever you're doing, whatever your relationships are, whatever your work is, you can do it in this way. In this bigger picture way. Wherever your workplace is, whatever your work is. You know, some people may have work situations where they're clearly, the helping professions, right? Where they're clearly helping others in that way. Many people don't. They have other kinds of work. But whatever your work is, you can see it as a way of benefiting others, benefiting society. Right? I mean, if you worked in construction, you go, oh, you know, may whoever live here find happiness here. May they enjoy their home. You know what I mean? It's a mind state. Right? If you're working on the roads, you know, I'm making the roads better for people, right? So people can ride smoothly on them. So whatever one is doing, one can always have that sense of selflessness about them and wanting good, wanting benefit to come out. And that mind state is transformative. So coming back to, our discussion about volunteerism here, you know, my sense is we want to provide an opportunity for people to support something that they think will be of benefit and is of benefit to others. So whether people are cleaning the toilets, people are cleaning the meditation hall, people are pulling weeds outside, or people are doing all the tasks, it should always be the same. The intention should always be the same. Right? That this work is supporting and benefiting others. Now, in this idea of selfless service, there is no attachment to outcome, which is another important thing. Because in work and activity, in truth, there's only the doing. Right? So that's why in Zen, when one is taught how to work, one is taught how to work only by being totally present to the actual doing, totally absorbed in the actual doing, with an empty mind. So it's a deep mindfulness practice work. But we are not working with a sense of outcome or a sense of how other people will perceive it. We are not doing it for praise. We are not doing it to be noticed. Right? We don't need the attaboys or attagirls, right? Because we know that to work in this mindful way with this attitude of only benefiting others is transforming me, right? It's cleansing my mind of the insidious contaminations of egocentricity and selfishness and narcissism, which you might have noticed is epidemic in our society, right? Epidemic in our society, right? I mean, we celebrate really unhealthy people, right? I mean, we are obsessed with celebrities that are unhealthy people, that are narcissists, right? Whose focus in life is primarily what? Self, what? Selfie. How they look. I mean, it's bizarre. Right? I mean, I saw something about the red carpet and all these pictures of all these people posing as they go down a red carpet. It's like... you know? I mean, and this is meaningful? I mean, what is this celebrating? Do you understand? It's you know, these are the images that our young people are digesting, thinking that this is of some significance. It's like people treating themselves like mannequins. You know, who needs to put a real person up there? Just get a mannequin, dress it. It's kind of sad. So we don't do things to bring attention to ourself. We are very happy to be of service. When someone asks us to do something, we should say, thank you for giving me this opportunity. Not thinking, gee, how can I get out of it? Because that's the voice of what? Of self. Now again, everything within reason. This doesn't mean, you know, that, you know, you don't get any sleep at night because, you know, this is not codependency. This is not all that unhealthy stuff. This is a healthy mind. It has boundaries. It knows it needs a good night's sleep. But it's in opposition to that other mind that's always parceling it out. Everything. There's no generosity. Even many people's generosity is very contrived. Did you know what I'm saying? It's very contrived. Weighing things. You know, many people are generous for things they want to be generous. You know what I'm saying? They're not really generous in their time, in their energy, in their use of their material resources. They give to things that only benefit them. I was saying at our retreat yesterday, when we were raising money for here, we had members of our community who lived in Naples said to me, you know, well, why should I give money to build this? It's not going to benefit me. I mean, they actually said that to me. And I was kind of dumbfounded. It's like, I thought charitable giving is about giving to benefit someone else. It never struck me that charitable giving is about giving something to benefit me. Right? That's called selfishness. There's no charity in that. Do you see what I'm saying? It's, of course it's, you know, even that's even better kind of generosity. To give to something that doesn't benefit me. Right? To give to something that someone else thinks will benefit others, even if I don't think it. Any questions about this? This is a deep selfless service. As again, we see it as like something over there, kind of a volunteerism, but I'm trying to present today selfless service as part of the path of awakening. It's a way of living, it's a way of being, and it's a path of happiness. But any questions, please feel free, or any challenges or any confusions, don't feel that. Yes.
The idea of joy and the joy of others.
Yes.
Was raised last Wednesday in a small group.
Mm-hmm.
Looking at what do you do if someone is acting in ways that are really but you see them, and there's somebody you like.
And they're doing something like tripping blind people, or I guess I would ask you what I mean, and is it those kinds of activities that? Well, whether the issue about somebody robbing a house is not whether it gives them joy or not. In that case, it's criminal. I mean, they're taking something that belongs to others, whether they take joy in it or not. I mean, I remember, I spent many years as a psychotherapist, and there used to be a big deal about self-esteem. Everybody was into self-esteem, you know. And then people, as years went by, and people began to do research on self-esteem, they found out, you know who had great self-esteem? Gang leaders. They were off the chart. You know, they had the positive regard of their peers. They were very competent at what they were doing. They felt very masterful. I mean, they you know. So that answers, the question is what? How do you do? You know, how do you live in a world where people are happy with having opinions or actions that you don't like? Right. Well, you have, you stand for something, but you don't hate them. You understand them. And And again, you know, it's coming back to our 14 mindfulness trainings, it says, you know, always, you know, be tolerant of people's views. Be respectful of people's views. But at the same time, you know, don't let people harm people because of their views. At that point, you know, but the answer is compassionate dialogue. How do you engage with people who have different views than you do? How do you engage with that person that's taking joy in what you think is harmful? I mean, you know, that's the key thing. And then that's whether it's a political issue or whether it's somebody in your own family or somebody in your relationship with. You know, how do you respond when somebody sees things differently, quite vehemently? Do you hate them? Do you judge them? Because, you know, you may think you're right and they're wrong. The problem is they think they're right and you're wrong. And that's very frustrating to us, isn't it? Because we think we're right and they're wrong. And to live in a world where people are equally vociferous and strong about their right and wrong is the world we live in. Right? And the question is, are we going to, you know, kill everybody who doesn't agree with us? That's one solution. It seems to be a fairly common solution these days, unfortunately, but we see that only makes things worse. I mean, at the end of the day, things have to be resolved. And in our tradition, we do that through, you know, engagement in a positive way, in dialogue, in education, in understanding, so we can get to the roots of things. Yes. Well, the Buddha, don't forget, he was a human being in a lot of them.
Yeah. There's times that selfless service, I'm so stuck in myself, that selfless service looks difficult to even move up. And I wondered if you'd address the difference between stumbling and doing something far more than might even be healthy. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everybody hear that question? So the question is, you're really sort of asking, is selfless service an absolute, or is there also a very relative human quality to it in relationship to one's own challenges and difficulties? And again, these are just aspirations. These are just ideas. They are not absolutes, right? So selfless service points us in a direction. Right? The path of awakening, enlightenment, points us in a direction. Living, you know, wanting to live an altruistic life to benefit others points us in a direction, right? That guides us. But my sense is, if you have, let's say, if you're following what's called the Bodhisattva path, this path of wanting to benefit others, but at the same time understanding the necessity of self-transformation and healing, if one is following that path, to be of benefit to other beings, well, the first being in your life is you, right? So the first person to liberate from their suffering is you, right? You can't step over her, you know, even though many people would like to. Or like you can't step over your body and have a different body than you have. I mean, there are some givens, but within the givens, you know, you move forward. But again, it's an aspiration. But the aspiration is always to do benefit. And again, if one is not doing benefit to one's body and harming one's body, then one is not doing benefit, right? One is not really being selfless, because many people that desire to go do something, even though it's injurious to me, is really all about self and how I think I should be and what I want to do. It's not present to the reality of, oh, the children are coming. I forgot about that. So, enough of this adult talk of enlightenment and selfless service and suffering. This is where it begins, so we have to help them so they have less of that. So thank you all, and we'll see what unfolds.